Have you ever been in an abusive relationship, or do you know somebody who maybe is at the moment? Today we're going to be talking about the difficulties of leaving an abusive relationship. If you want to find out more about how you can improve your relationships, head over to therelationshipmaze.com. And if you want to get more notes about this show, head over to therelationshipmazepodcast.com, where you can get extra material about this podcast. And remember, press subscribe now so you can hear every episode. Welcome to today's podcast. Today, we're talking about abusive relationships, in particular, the difficulties and challenges of leaving an abusive relationship. And to start with, let's just talk about one definition of abuse. Well, what is abuse? Well, a legal definition, which comes from the Cornell Law School, is abuse is generally physically, sexually, or mentally injuring a person. In child abuse, that's physically, sexually, or mentally injuring a child, either with intent or through neglect.
Right, yeah. So today we're going to be talking particularly about adult relationships and abuse in the context of an adult relationship, a romantic relationship, can, as Tom just said, it can take many, many forms. And it can mean, for example, that you're being controlled by a partner, that your partner is constantly putting you down, is shouting at you, is belittling you, constantly telling you that you're not self, you know, that you're not worthy. So it can take a lot of different forms. And of course, very often what people immediately associate with abuse is physical abuse in a relationship. This is a really big topic that we will pick up in another podcast as well. But today we want to focus specifically on this question of why are people staying in abusive relationships? Because if you have been in this situation before, you might have wondered yourself, why did I spend so much time with this person? Why did I not leave earlier? Or you might know someone, you might have a friend where you think, actually, this relationship that they're describing, I really cannot understand why they're not leaving their partner. So there's often very little understanding about what happens. Why does this go on for such a long period of time? Why is my friend not leaving this relationship? And often, if you are stuck in an abusive relationship, you might actually also get quite a lot of frustration. You might experience a lot of frustration from your friends who keep on saying, come on, get away from this partner. You know, this is not good enough. Get out of this relationship. Now, what we want to look at specifically today in order to understand the psychological processes of being in an abusive relationship is attachment theory. We're looking at attachment theory because it can be very, very helpful in terms of explaining the dynamic, the relational dynamic that plays out in an abusive relationship. So attachment theory, we've talked about it before. It was developed by John Bowlby. And it was a theory, it's a theory that enables us to understand our connection with other human beings in a bit more detail and how we connect to other people and what kind of relationships we develop with other human people, how we are attaching to a person, to other people in our life, in particular, how we're attaching to people who we are very close to in our life, usually our partner.
Yeah, and Bowlby observed different behaviour patterns in babies. So in babies when they thought they were under threats, and also in responses from the baby's primary caregivers. So with infants whose caregivers responded to distress, where they kind of soothed the child, the young child would develop an understanding of a world that others are there to make them safe and secure. Whereas the infants whose caregivers ignored the distressed, the infants would often kind of protest or kind of crank up their crying until they get a response. Or eventually some of them would give up, which leads to a different attachment style. So basically in both of these instances, the infants would develop an insecure sense of themselves in the world. So not just in terms of that relationship then, but in terms of security and their self-worth and feelings of confidence in the world. Later on.
So kind of in a nutshell, in terms of attachment style, so if a child has a caregiver whose parent is there, whose caregiver is there when they are distressed, who they can go to when they feel upset about something, then they can develop over a long period of time, if they know my caregiver is always going to be there for me, they develop a secure attachment. So they know there's someone there I can go to who can soothe me. But if they have learned that the caregiver is a little bit sort of unpredictable, sometimes they're there, sometimes they can soothe me, sometimes they can't not, then they might have developed an anxious attachment style. So where they're never quite sure whether mum or dad are going to be available. So they just sort of have to crank up their protest. They have to shout a bit louder, and maybe then mum or dad will come running and look after them. But then finally, yeah, as Tom just said, sort of in a nutshell, if this protest goes nowhere, if the child kind of again and again asks for mum and dad to come running and they don't, eventually they'll just give up and they develop what we call an avoidant attachment style. And there's a fourth form, which we'll come back to in a minute as well, which is a sort of mixture of avoidance and anxious, where there's a fearful, it's called a fearful attachment style, where sometimes you might crank up the protest and sometimes you might just give up altogether. Now, why is all of this relevant, you might say? Sorry, I'm just sort of waffling on a little bit, but trying to explain what attachment is. What's really interesting is that the principles of attachment in children can also be applied to attachment in adult relationships, where basically your partner functions as the attachment figure. So what used to be, when you're a child, your caregiver, usually mum and dad, in adult relationships is your partner. So your partner can either provide you with security or they can provide you with insecurity. They can be a place of haven for you to return to and make you feel good and secure about the world, a place of safety, or they can do the opposite, where they can actually generate a lot of insecurity and distress in you. So if you have a partner who's always responsive to your needs, who is there for you when you are upset, for example, then they provide you with security and reassurance. But if you have a partner who is sometimes there for you, sometimes not, where you're not entirely sure whether they're present for you, whether they really love you, for example, or where you kind of get into this mode where you constantly feel insecure in the relationship and anxious, then you experience anxiety in the relationship quite frequently. Or you might also be in a relationship with a partner where you or your partner are very avoidant in the relationship. And we talk about the different dynamics about these different attachment styles in one of our earlier podcasts. So I'd really strongly encourage you to kind of listen in and see what happens if one partner is anxious, the other one's avoidant, or both partners are avoidant, or both partners are anxious, and sort of see how that plays out. What we are really interested in today is that if you have had an experience as a child in your childhood where you had an insecure attachment, then you are very likely to seek strong attachments in your adulthood. So you're very interested in forming strong attachment bonds with other people. You're more susceptible, so to speak, to find someone who you can attach to, who can finally provide you with the security and the safety that you might have never experienced in childhood. So that's what's really relevant here. And that makes you more, Tom. That makes you more susceptible to looking for, to being abused, to be in a relationship which is abusive. Sorry, yeah. Tom, do you want to pick up on that?
Well, I think just to clarify that. So essentially, if you have that sort of anxious attachment style, you might be more, you know, if you find that person you attach to and you know, that person is potentially abusive, well, perversely, that can actually sometimes create an even stronger attachment there, because you're desperately seeking their approval. Because as that person who is anxiously attached, you often will kind of feel it's your own self-worth. You feel that there's something wrong with you. So it's like you're responsible for the fact this other person is denying you love, or they're kind of treating you in this way. So you feel there's something wrong with you. that it's your fault, which leads to this pattern perversely where somehow that attachment becomes even stronger.
Yes. So usually when you have been insecurely attached as a child, you very often there's a very low sense of self-worth, a very low sense of self-esteem, and often also this a very deep-seated sense of shame that goes very, very deep. And this shame basically goes to this idea that you're not lovable, that you're not adorable enough, that there's something inherently wrong with you that basically made your parents or your caregivers not love you enough. So you're constantly seeking some sort of sense of reassurance from your partner that really, in the end, you are lovable. And you're constantly also terrified that you're going to be abandoned again, that the other person is not going to be there for you. So there's always this kind of terror and fear of being left by your partner. And that perversely then creates more dependency and more vulnerability in the relationship. And all of this kind of then gets thrown into this constant sense of shame that you have. So a sense of a lot of lack of self-worth that you have, which makes you then more reliant on validation from your partner. So you're constantly seeking some sense of, you know, from your partner, am I good enough as a person? And that makes so that you feel less ashamed of the relationship.
And and also I think with abusive relationships as well, that's used by the abuser. So yeah. Basically, when the person is feeling very upset as a result of something that's happened, the way they're being treated, physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually, then the abuser will blame the other person that it's something wrong with them that's making them feel that way, for example. So they turn that around, which again feeds into that low sense of self-worth. And to somebody who isn't anxiously attached, you know, you think, well, this is rubbish, this is nonsense. But in that dynamic, it becomes very, ties into that low sense of self-worth again. Like, you know, there is something wrong with them. It is their fault. Or maybe it's not the other person. It's them.
Yeah. So what's really important here also is to look at the kind of attachment style that feeds this cycle of staying in a relationship which is abusive. If you have a very secure attachment style, you're not so likely, and I'm saying this sort of as a qualifier, because you can end up in an abusive relationship as well, even if you're very secure, but you're less likely, let's put it that way, you're much less likely to be in an abusive relationship if you have a secure attachment style, because you can recognize the pattern, so to speak, and because you're more likely to have a very strong sense of self-worth, you're more likely to say, I'm not staying in this relationship.
And just to clarify that as well, is that your attachment style isn't necessarily the attachment style you had as an infant.
No.
It changes throughout life. So in terms of our different relationships, and as Angela was saying, if you're at that time when you're in a relationship, if you are more securely attached, or you have more of a secure attachment style, then, you know, there could be circumstances around you. For example, it could be, you know, if someone had loss in the family, had traumas at work, and they suddenly became, their sense of self-worth became lower in other contexts, it's possible that that could leave them more vulnerable at that time. And then that wrong relationship could lead to them developing a more anxious or avoidant attachment style as a result of the relationship they're currently in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's also really important to understand is that if the relationship is abusive, both partners tend to have an insecure attachment style. So somebody who is secure does not usually tend to display abusive behavior. So usually you have both partners who are very insecure. And the abuser very often displays almost similar fears as the partner who is abused, because the abuser also fears abandonment and rejection. So the abusive partners very often actually are overly dependent on their partner as well, but they respond with anger, with rage when they feel that their partner is not available, when they get triggered in their fear of abandonment. So they often, what you often find, and I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast that there's this fourth attachment style, abusive partners very often display an attachment style that we call a fearful attachment, which is a bit of a mix between an anxious attachment style and a dismissive attachment style. They kind of veer from one extreme to the other, sometimes being anxious, sometimes being completely dismissive of their partner. So they often, abusive partners often tend to deflect any kind of dependency needs. They kind of say, well, I don't have any dependency needs. I don't really need you. They kind of pass it on to their partner. And they just basically expect their partner to have the dependency needs in the context of asking their partner to be completely devoted to them. So if this devotion then is under threat, if they feel the partner is not needing them anymore, that's when their fearful attachment gets triggered and they become very abusive, usually very angry. The anger can manifest either in terms of violence, rage, or being really mean to the partner, putting them down, etc., etc.
I'm just curious as well, Angela, what you consider with this is this in terms of, you know, some of that dynamic as well is the abuser, again, who will have an insecure attachment as well. And ultimately, there's that kind of fear of like losing that relationship because they want the attachment.
Yeah.
Often the abuser uses more dynamics of power and control as a way to try and make sure they don't lose that attachment. So they think there's kind of, it's their defense mechanism in a way, is power and control, whereas the person who's abused would often fall more into compliance.
Yes.
Although sometimes a person being abused may also, I'm sorry, not a person being abused, but someone who is of a anxious attachment style may sometimes have patterns that can be manipulative too. But in this situation, like for example, protest behaviour.
Yeah.
But in terms of the power dynamic of the abusive relationship, I think the power and control versus compliance is quite a strong dynamic. So compliance, you know, just do what you say. That's the way that, you know, basically you'll make sure that the person loves you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is often what plays out in the beginning stage of the relationship before the abuse cycle starts. In the early stages of the relationship, the abuser will often sort of what is called love bomb their partner. They will shower them with affection, with love. So they kind of make sure that they basically, that the other person will never abandon them because they're so desirable, because they're so loving. And that's often where the kind of cycle starts. And the partner who is abused will think, oh, wonderful, finally there's someone there who really cares for me, who loves me. So that's where this whole kind of cycle starts in the abuse cycle. As the relationship then develops, the love bombing stops, and the abused partner will then start to believe that somehow, for some reason, they deserve the abuse and they need to just work extra hard to win back what they originally had in the relationship. They want to win back the early stages of the relationship, where they were loved bombed, where the abusive partner was very demonstrative in their love. And they'll get sort of little snippets here and there. So they will get a little bit of that because the abuser will also reinforce the message of love here and there. And as soon as the abused partner gets these little snippets and gets the attention, they feel validated again. They feel reassured. Actually, my partner loves me after all. And so it continues.
Yeah. And initially, they've had this expectation of somebody or this kind of dream person that isn't reality through being love bombed and all these different things. So in their mind, they have this illusion of this person as they might be. And, you know, when things are really bad, it's again, there's might be justifications like, well, it's not their fault. They're actually really a nice person. They're just having a difficult time, whatever it might be. And just thinking, well, just in the future, if I stick through this, then we can have that amazing relationship again.
Yeah. Because there's often this kind of, this illusion that, for the abused partner, that they are indispensable to the other, to the abuser. I am ultimately, my partner really needs me so much that it's only me who can make them happy. So that it creates this sort of illusion that you're really powerful in that sense in the relationship because your abusing partner needs you so much in the relationship. Okay, I think one other dimension that we haven't mentioned yet is, but I think it's really, really helpful in terms of understanding why it's so hard to move away from an abusive partner is the notion of the trauma bond. It's called trauma bond, or sometimes what you might also hear in literature is a different term, which is the Stockholm syndrome. Yeah, sorry. So that's this sort of automatic, very completely unconscious emotional response to the trauma of becoming a victim. So you basically learn that the best way to handle the situation is to bond even stronger to your partner. You can't leave them because that would be too risky. If you try to get away from the abuser, you put yourself at risk. So a better way of actually managing this, the abuse, is to kind of bond even stronger to your partner. And it's often described, trauma bonding is actually often described as a sort of super glue in the relationship. It kind of completely glues you to the partner. You might be familiar with it. Do you want to sort of talk a bit about Stockholm syndrome? It's something that's come up in the literature. In the context of hostages.
Yeah, so with hostages, where people are taken hostage in any sort of scenario, what can happen is, what was, as Angela said, Stockholm syndrome, where the people who are the hostages develop that bond to the people who are taking them hostage. And again, it's partly that survival instinct, is that, you know, if you were to express anger, you're going to put yourself more at risk. And in fact, one of the instinctual things, not something we think about consciously, but just an unconscious survival process, is we won't see the bad things about them. We try not to see the bad. We actually only see what might be the positive aspects of them. So we form this bond, which essentially is part of a survival instinct. However strange that actually sounds when you say it, because when you see this process from the outside, it seems very, very odd. It doesn't seem like something that should happen, but it's a survival instinct.
Yeah, and it's a biological process, so it kind of automatically kicks in. It's basically when we feel that we are in extreme danger, where our captor basically has control over life and death, ultimately, then really the best thing is to just deny any kind of feelings of anger or frustration that you have, because that basically avoids the risk of being killed by the captor. And we just become dependent, and it becomes a lot safer to just give in. It's this sort of complete sense of helplessness, ultimately, that kind of guides this survival instinct.
And I think also perversely is that when there is that sense of real threat, sometimes the positive emotions get, when there are positive experiences, those actually get enhanced to an artificial level. Yeah. So it's a little bit like a drug. So there's that rush of that kind of, you know, like in that abusive relationship. So there may be times where there is that closeness again, or where the person does kind of show that love bombing again. And because those become heightened, because otherwise there is that sense of real threat of life, which, you know, these experiences to some level provide an artificial kind of exaggeration of emotions.
Yeah, and what's also really, really interesting, I think, and there's been research into that, which has shown that actually our natural instinct when we are in danger, when we're at risk, particularly when we feel we are at risk of losing our life, we are seeking comfort always from the person who's closest to us. And even if that person is the source of the fear, we still run towards that person. So that's the sort of perverse nature of the trauma bond, is that we're seeking proximity to the very person who's actually causing the danger in the first place. So as I say, the dynamics in trauma bonding is like an emotional super glue. We're kind of gluing ourselves to the very person who's actually producing the strong and intense risk to our livelihood in order to survive. So it serves a purpose, basically. The reason why somebody who's in an abusive relationship is not leaving the relationship is because they're trying to survive. And that, of course, doesn't make sense to the outsider who's not in it. It doesn't make any logical sense, but it absolutely makes psychological sense. Yeah. That we're staying in it.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, in terms of what can you do to leave it? Well, first of all, you know, it's first of all seeking therapy, seeking some help. It's really important having that awareness, first of all, awareness of actually that dynamic, because when you're in it so long and you're blaming yourself, you're not often not even aware that you're in that abusive relationship, because to you it's become normal.
Yeah,
it's become normalized. Sometimes people outside say these things, we just don't believe them because we're stuck in that sort of belief that this is just normal, this is it's your fault. So having that awareness, having that insight is the first step, which can take a long time.
Yeah, and then I think what is also really, really difficult about abusive relationships is this sense of shame that you walk around with as a survivor of abuse. So there's this real sense of I somehow contributed to this situation. I'm complicit in this. I allowed this other person to be abusive to me. So there's a lot of blame usually that comes with being in an abusive relationship. The sense of that I'm responsible for my own demise here. I'm responsible for these the bad things that are happening to me. Talking about shame, what's also really interesting in the context of abusive relationship is that very often what you are carrying around, if you are the survivor of an abusive relationship, is not only your own shame, but also the shame of your abusing partner. That sort of sounds a bit odd, but they cannot acknowledge their shame, so you kind of take it on. So you carry their shame and you carry your own. And it's really difficult to work through that. That requires definitely some professional help to kind of work that out.
And also in terms of societal structures, until recently, relatively recently, in the UK certainly, emotional abuse wasn't considered a criminal offence.
Yeah.
So physical abuse was, sexual abuse was, but not emotional abuse. Yeah. So it was almost like it's not acknowledged as something that is particularly wrong as a dynamic. So you may have that shame and feel that it is your fault because it's not recognised from the outside world. Whereas now, as it's become more acknowledged, there's that level where we can start to have that awareness of this dynamic, which I think is really important for people to be able to kind of start to look at dealing with some of that sense of shame that they have and the awareness of that dynamic in the first place.
Absolutely.
And also, going back to attachment, what's really key is building a sense of self-worth, building your own self-belief. Awareness of those patterns that he kept you for so long, and that can take a long time, and there can be ups and downs. You can sometimes have days where you feel more sense of self-worth, and then days where you think, well, maybe it was me, and it takes time to rebuild that. Again, the longer you've been in that relationship, the more that pattern's become established, which is going to take probably more time to kind of rebuild yourself with.
Yeah, so just to sort of come back, we started this discussion of talking about attachment styles, and as Tom said earlier on, you might have had an experience in childhood where you had an anxious attachment style, which can be overcome and can be changed. Your attachment style can always change. It's not set in stone. If you have a secure relationship, for example, you can learn to attach very securely to someone else and become more secure in yourself. But you might have more of a tendency potentially to seek to kind of get into this cycle. That's kind of where we started this discussion of getting together with somebody who is insecure and for this kind of abusive dynamic to play out. But you can also get out of that, and that's a really positive message here, that you can learn to leave a domestic abusive relationship, but it will require some help. It really is not that easy for all the reasons that we've just talked about. So there's nothing wrong with you if you experience that. You are ultimately, you're trying to survive. That's what you're trying to do in a relationship which is abusive. And it might take some time, and you certainly might require some help to get out of it, to work through these very complex psychological presentations that you experience when you are in this relationship. And also, just to come back to where we started this discussion, also if you have a friend who's going through this experience, if you have a friend who is in an abusive relationship, you need to understand that it's really quite difficult for your friend, for all the reasons that we just talked about, to just simply walk away from an abusive relationship. It requires more understanding and requires a lot more insight to walk away.
Yeah, and it's really important as well, if you feel you might be in a situation like this, to seek help. And and there are many different organisations around, depending what country you're in. So it is worth kind of searching for those organisations who help victims of abuse. Mm. So I think most countries will have organisations like that. Mm. There's too many organisations for us to really list them all.
Yeah.
But we might put some in the kind of the notes section of the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I always really like to use the term survivor rather than victim, because to actually walk away from an abusive relationship requires extraordinary skills. And yes, you might have experienced yourself as being the victim in the relationship, but you've also survived. You've actually survived an incredibly difficult scenario. So survivor is usually the term that we use in this particular context, because you've literally survived a life-threatening situation, potentially.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think there's lots more to talk about, particularly when we talk about trauma. We will do a podcast on trauma in future as well. We've sort of touched on some aspects of the whole area of abusive relationships. There's certainly a lot more that we could be talking about in future, and we will.
Yeah, so please subscribe to this podcast. Like as Angela said, we're going to explore more concepts with this, more kind of ideas with this in future podcasts. Head over to the relationshipmazepodcast.com, where we have extra notes about this episode. And if you want to find out more about how you can find and create fulfilling relationships, please head over to therelationshipmaze.com. And we look forward to speaking with you in the next episode.
Yeah, look forward to seeing you next week, and take good care. Bye for now.